This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air. This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat. It's time to dive into something truly special. Hello, how are you? Вітаю, як справи? Last week, something happened in New Zealand's media landscape that deeply upset me. It felt as Russian narratives had flooded the information space. The Russian ambassador appeared in the pages of respected New Zealand publications, portraying Russia as a victim, shifting responsibility for the war onto Ukraine, and repeating familiar Kremlin talking points. What I found particularly disturbing was not that the Russian ambassador repeated Kremlin talking points. Of course, no one should be surprised when a representative of the Russian state attempts to justify Russia's actions, shift blame onto Ukraine, portray Russia as a victim. But what was more disappointing was how some media outlets choose to present these interviews. Editors had options. They could have challenged unsupported claims. They could have provided factual context. They could have included expert commentary or fact-checking alongside the ambassador's statements. They could have shortened or edited out obvious propaganda narratives rather than presenting them at face value. Instead, what we saw was a professional propagandist being given a respected platform to repeat Kremlin narratives with little scrutiny. In some cases, the interview format shifted from journalism into something much closer to a vehicle for disseminating Russian state messaging. That is deeply concerning because journalism is not simply about giving everyone a microphone and stepping away. Responsible journalism involves verification, context, and challenging claims that are demonstrably false or misleading. This is especially important when dealing with representatives of an authoritarian state that has invested billions of dollars into global disinformation campaigns and information operations. What particularly struck me was one article claiming that New Zealanders are supposedly consuming Ukrainian propaganda. The very framing of such a statement raises serious concerns. This is not an abstract geopolitical disagreement or a conflict between two equally responsible sides. This is about a country, Russia, that launched a full-scale invasion against its neighbor. It is about a state that launched missiles at Ukrainian cities on a daily basis, attacks civilian infrastructure, hospitals, schools, and residential buildings. It is about a state whose actions have repeatedly been condemned by the international community as grave violations of international law. For me, this is not an abstract topic of international politics. It is about human lives. While we read these articles, in peaceful New Zealand, Ukrainians continue to wake up to the sound of air raid sirens. Some of them didn't wake up. Parents take their children to shelters night after night. People are killed in attacks on their homes. Families wait for loved ones to return from the front lines or from Russian captivity. This is precisely why it is so important to talk about disinformation. Modern propaganda rarely looks like blatant lies. More often, it disguises itself as an alternative perspective, as claims that both sides are equally right, or as calls to hear all points of view. However, when we are talking about aggression, occupation, and war crimes, we must pay close attention to how information narratives are constructed and promoted. That is why today we will be discussing how Russian disinformation has evolved in 2026, the new tools and techniques it employs, why we are witnessing a new wave of information operations right now, and how each of us can protect ourselves from manipulation. When we talk about Russian propaganda, many people still imagine crude fake news, absurd television reports, or blatant lies that are easy to identify. However, the reality of 2026 is far more complex. Russian disinformation has not disappeared. It has adapted. It has become more sophisticated, more technological, and less visible. While many propaganda messages at the beginning of the full-scale invasion were obvious, today's main danger lies in the fact that manipulation is becoming increasingly difficult to distinguish from ordinary information. Today we are no longer dealing with isolated fake stories, but with an entire system of information influence. It is a network of interconnected tools, official Kremlin statements, state-controlled media outlets, proxy websites, bots, bloggers, artificial intelligence, and social media algorithms. Experts note that the primary goal of modern Russian disinformation has changed. Whereas previously the focus was on justifying aggression against Ukraine, the current objective is to sow doubt, create fatigue, and reduce international support for Ukraine. One important direction is the attempt to restore the reception of Russia as a normal country without ending the war and without accepting any responsibility for the crimes committed. In various countries, narratives are being promoted suggesting that normalizing relations with Russia is natural and inevitable. This is reflected in discussions about allowing Russian athletes to return to international competitions, resuming cultural exchanges, partially lifting sanctions, or restoring economic cooperation. At the same time, Ukraine is increasingly being demonized. Across Europe, claims are being spread suggesting that Ukrainian refugees place excessive pressure on social welfare system, take jobs away from local populations, or receive unfair privileges. However, research by the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development shows a different reality. Most Ukrainians have actively integrated into the labor markets of their host countries, pay taxes, and contribute positively to local economies. Today in our studio we are joined by Michael Litsky, the first president of the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand on the South Island, a community activist and a vocal advocate for the fight against Russian propaganda in New Zealand's media landscape. Over the years, Michael has been actively challenging disinformation and misleading narratives about Ukraine, achieving several successful outcomes in holding media organizations accountable for the way they present information related to Russia's war against Ukraine. Michael, welcome to Borscht Club. You have already won more than one battle against Russian propaganda. What motivates you to continue fighting against it?
Well, first of all, my origin, because I was born in Kiev, which is the capital of Ukraine. I grew up there, I lived there till I was 29, and it's still an essential part of my life, even though, I've been living abroad for quite a while. That is the first thing, of course. The second thing is that now, because I've been living here in New Zealand and in the free world for the most part of my life, I regard it as my country and my world and my culture, my people, and Russia is attacking the free world right now, and we are under a serious threat of a third world war and nuclear destruction just because of that. And I think it's very important, it's essential for people in the West to correctly understand it, and that gives me the other motivation to fight against it.
For listeners who may not be familiar with the topic, how would you describe Russian propaganda? What are its main characteristics and what makes it different from ordinary misinformation?
Russian propaganda is multifaceted. Nowadays, we have numerous what you call agents of influence in the West. And they exist on many, many levels. So it may not be immediately obvious, but nowadays you've got access to Google and you've got access to artificial intelligence. So for any person listening to us, it's very easy to check my words and to verify them. They don't have to believe me. So, for example, I can say that in the Western civilized world, since the beginning of this active stage of war with Ukraine, more than 1,000 Russian agents were arrested, tried in court, sent back home if they were essentially Russian citizens being spies or agents under the diplomatic disguise, or if they were Westerners, they were obviously either fined or put in jail or whatever else. This is just the tip of the iceberg. It's much the same as, say, when you're reading a report about a huge amount of drugs that were seized somewhere in Auckland or Christchurch Airport, you very well realize that it doesn't mean that the drugs are going to suddenly miraculously disappear from your neighborhood. Not everybody is caught. The minority is probably caught. The majority is still out there. They're acting and they're acting against us. And they're acting on many different levels. So to give you an example, what you cited initially about my fights and wins, it started with Matt Robson and Mike Smith and the article that that they said is not fair because they were for Russia and so on and so forth. They're respectable New Zealand politicians, and unfortunately in this case they proved out to be Russian agents, willingly or coerced, not sure about that, not going to comment on it, but the fact remains. But also you've got, say, people commenting on posts on Facebook, and those people can be Russian trolls. They can be empty profiles. It's actually very easy to check. You go there and check, and you see there's an empty profile. There's nothing there. That means it's a troll. It's actually not a person. It's just, you know, a system that is organized from there. The other level, that's when something is directly said in favor of Russia or something negative is said about Ukraine or about its Western allies. But there's a different level, too. What Russia's been doing a lot recently, they've invested huge amount of money, and again, you do not have to believe me. You can easily find it online and check what I'm saying. So they invested a huge amount of money in various marginal movements in the West, people who claim all kinds of things, say that are against vaccinations, people who say that the earth is flat, people who say that the government is spraying some chemicals on us via chemtrails, etc., etc. You know, there's a huge amount of those, you know, marginal movements in terms of philosophy, religion, science, politics, all kinds of things. Common sense tells you that usually it's some kind of bullshit. We all know it. What's interesting is that Russia never created those movements. They just took advantage of their existence. So when they could find something like that, they would start invigorating it, pouring money into it. And the funniest thing is that the people who are there, they probably don't even realize where the money is suddenly coming from. But it does help them boost their agenda. And as a result, it doesn't matter what they are saying. They could be saying that there are aliens who are trying to conquer the Earth, and then they can be saying that there are no aliens and it's a lie. Doesn't matter what they say. The action that they perform is the general mistrust. They organize general mistrust of heaps of lesser educated population in the government institutions. And this is the aim. This is what Russia is doing. This is actually an active stage of war. It's called hybrid war. And again, that's something that you can easily verify online. So that's another facet of it. And then, of course, there are lots of different things. So for example, you could have a perfectly respectable gentleman in the States, somebody like John Kiriakou, for instance, the famous CIA agent who was the whistleblower on the Guantanamo torture issue, who now is working as effectively as a Russian agent because he is in favor of Russia quite openly, and he's telling lies online about it. And at the same time, you can't really say that you couldn't confidently say that he's being paid for it. Maybe he's just what you call a useful idiot. Could be. But anyway, it's just to prove that there are many layers of it, many faces of it. But in general, it's definitely directed towards the destruction of the Western civilization as we know it. It's directed to undermine the values of Western democracy as we know it. And unfortunately, especially when you look at the current political situation in some of the countries, it actually seems to be working.
You almost answered all my questions in one go, but I will ask them anyway. Many experts are talking about a new wave of Russian disinformation campaigns. Why is this happening now, and why does it seem to be so intensive at this particular moment? For example, we have seen the Russian ambassador appearing in several New Zealand media outlets recently promoting familiar Kremlin narratives and claiming the New Zealanders are being influenced by Ukrainian propaganda. So, why now?
Well, probably because they're losing the war. You see, very luckily for us all, Russian army is not as efficient on the battlefield as everybody believed it could be before the war started. And that's a sort of a blessing. But they are efficient in some other respects, which people may not even understand what's happening, but it is happening at the same time. And of course, when I see an article like that, I think it's a shame and a disgrace for New Zealand that something like that is happening, because the immediate parallel that occurs in my mind is Well, imagine that something like that would have been published, say, towards the end of 1944, and it would have been an interview with an official of the government of the Nazi Germany. Unthinkable. Nobody would publish an article like that. Nobody would even go and take an interview like that, at least, you know, in my honest opinion. The very fact that Russia, Russian politics, Russian, you know, military actions, Russian culture is perceived differently today is morally very, very wrong. And people don't understand it. I can tell you that I am not denying Russian culture. It's quite a culture cancellation is sort of a modern trend. I'm not, you know, trendy, and I'm not modern. I don't honestly think that the current actions of the Russian society and the Russian government have anything to do with Leo Tolstoy, to be honest. And the same as you can't blame Wagner for what the Nazis did. You just can't, or Bach, for example. But even though I can, like, every time I turn on the radio and listen to the classical channel, you know, the museum concert, I feel that it's morally wrong because they're all the time playing heaps of Russian music. And to do it today, it just doesn't sound very right. Same as you wouldn't play Wagner on the radio in 1944 for the very same reason.
What are some of the common signs that a piece of content might be propagandistic? Are there any red flags that ordinary people should pay attention to when reading news articles or social media posts?
That's actually an easy one. As I said before, and I'm going to reiterate it on it, you've got Google and you've got artificial intelligence. Basic as it is, it can make mistakes. It's not always 100% accurate. But in those general terms, it's usually more or less accurate. I'm not saying that you can trust it to a word, but what I would do is you ask it a question, and if, say, you don't know what the real circumstance is there, you're not sure, just Google it, just check. And you want to ask the questions in several different ways to make sure you get the right answer, because if for whatever reason Google couldn't find the right information or didn't quite answer it correctly first time, it will do so next time. So, for example, like you may remember, I mentioned John Kiriakou earlier today. So if I go right now to, say, ChatGPT and put a question there, and I ask, is John Kiriakou a Russian agent of influence? ChatGPT will answer that it's ambiguous, that you can't really say that because even though he did express some views that, you know, in favor of Russia, you may not be able to say that objectively, that he's like a paid agent, et cetera, et cetera. So the answer is ambiguous. The answer is not black and white. It doesn't say yes or no. However, you start reading the, you know, the explanation about it and say you have never heard the name of John Kiriakou before. You don't know who the guy is, but you start reading it, and what you immediately see is he works for Sputnik, a Russian state-funded media outlet. Well, that surely answers your question, right? So you don't really need to look further than that.
From your perspective, are New Zealanders concerned about these issues? Do you think people in New Zealand recognize Russian disinformation as a real challenge, or is it often seen as a distant problem affecting other countries?
Well, right now, just because everybody has a TV at home and they're watching the news, they are more educated than they used to be. I can still clearly remember how, say, 5-6 years ago, you would have to explain what's the difference between Russia and Ukraine in the first place. Now, at least, you don't have to explain that. But having said that, they all have different various opinions. And what I think is not quite right here is that they have this sort of tendency to say the world is crazy in general. So they would say, well, yeah, Putin is crazy, but then Trump is crazy too, which is not exactly a fair comparison. Because, you know, I'm not a big fan of Trump. It would be strange if I was. But you just can't compare the two different categories ethically, morally, and practically. They just, you know, it's totally wrong to compare. And it would be wrong to say that the whole world is crazy and we are not part of it, because we are part of it. We are under the influence. And if there's a war, which is perpetrated against the free world, which we are part of. We have to acknowledge that it's going on. We have to do something about it. We have to fight back. We have to stand up for our values, for things that we believe in, and freedom, and human rights, and democracy. We shouldn't pretend that it doesn't concern us, and it has nothing to do with us. The war is not in Ukraine. The war is a world war. The war is here. The war is against every one of us. It's trying to undermine our values here in New Zealand just as much as it is in Ukraine, in UK, or, say, in France or Germany.
Has the nature of Russian propaganda changed since the beginning of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine? If so, what are the biggest changes you have observed?
Well, as I said, it's multifaceted. So the biggest change, I wouldn't say it's a change. It's not a change. It's sort of a variable. So they say one thing to the West, and they say a totally different thing for their own inner market. So, say, for example, in Russian news, if you watch it, Russian TV there, say, the first channel, you would regularly hear that they're capable of annihilating the West, that burning it, bombing it to smithereens, that they've got advanced nukes, that they can just, you know, incinerate London, Washington, and New York in no time at all, that everybody should be afraid of them, that they, you know, they talk about it in a very menacing terms. They talk about it like they're absolutely going to do it, that they can do it any minute, that it's a real plan and stuff like that. This is the face of the Russian propaganda directed at their citizens, the people over there who should be feeling that they are living in the world where everybody's against them, everybody's trying to, you know, do something nasty to them, conquer them, although in reality, of course, it's not happening at all. It never happened, never going to. But as for the outer world, they try to project a totally different picture. And this article that we were just talking about, the recent interview, this is a typical example of it. You suddenly see a nice face of the enemy who is pretending they're not an enemy at all. They're actually your friend. And, you know, we're buddies and stuff like that. Well, as I said, to even publish something like that is just as morally wrong as it would have been to do an interview with somebody like Goering and Goebbels in 1944.
How has artificial intelligence changed the landscape of disinformation? Are deepfakes and AI-generated content becoming a significant threat?
That would refer to those marginal groups and schools of thought that I talked about earlier. Over there, yes, probably it does play a big role. As for the automatic replies that are AI-generated, you know, in the forums, they're easy to detect. If you go to any sort of hot post in any Facebook forum discussing, or a group, for example, what's going on at the front, you will easily spot there those computer-generated comments. You can tell straight away. And if in doubt, you can check yourself. You can actually say, how good am I at spotting it? This looks like it. This looks pretty dodgy. Click on it, see an empty profile. There's your proof.
You started talking about social media already. So let's explore that a bit further. What role do social media platforms play in spreading propaganda? Do you think they are doing enough to address the problem? What's wrong with them?
I would say what's wrong is that even if you complain about them, they tend to disregard it. Well, they don't disregard it. They officially send you an answer after a while, and they say that, yeah, we thank you for your feedback, blah, 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 but they're not canceling the input. And any pro-Russian agency still has a voice, which in itself is, of course, absolutely immoral, because I believe that the only correct way to speak to murderers and terrorists is to have talks with them just long enough for the marksman or the sniper to find his aim. Not longer than that, and not for any other purpose.
And finally, what message would you like to leave with our listeners about the importance of media literacy and critical thinking in today's world?
Well, I can only say it one more time. I already said it before, but I'm going to repeat it. It's very easy to check any information online. You just go, put it in Google, do a search. So, for example, you know about the artificial starvation, the much-publicized Holodomor in Ukraine. In various estimates, 6, 7, or 8 million Ukrainians were destroyed during a relatively short period of time due to artificial hunger and starvation. If you're in doubt about it, you just Google it, and you can find all the information there. And it's normally it's as easy as that. It doesn't take a long time. It normally would take you literally 2 minutes to find pretty much any information online now and have a read. And it would, you can tell that it's coming from objective sources. Usually you can tell. So, for example, if it's Wikipedia, you can normally trust it rather than, you know, RT and stuff like that. So, it's not difficult to check any source of information to verify it and to have your own opinion based on the facts that you could, you know, read about there.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Take care and stay informed. Don't let yourselves be manipulated. See you next time. Слава Україні! Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air. This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.